I have a degree in nanotechnology.
No, we don't listen to reason on this podcast. Hello and welcome to Surviving the Apocalypse, the Nerd's Way.
The steady drip feed of pop culture and your guide to surviving the ultimate death of humanity.
Yes. That's good. My name is John, and with me is my co-host,
Adam. Hello and welcome.
And we have a very special guest today, a friend of the show. It's Tyson from Screen Review Time Warp.
Oh, thank you. I wouldn't say I was a special guest, but I'll take the guest
You're
part.
Very, very special. I mean, thank you. We've mentioned you enough on the podcast as it is that you've unofficially been a guest, as it were.
Well, you know, why not?
Yeah, it's actually quite surprising that you haven't been on sooner.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be here now, as it is.
Oh, that's very good. Well, I mean, we do talk a lot of science on here, most of it wrong, and I know it grinds your gears, so we figured we'd allow you to come on and set the record straight.
Yes, very much so.
Also, what do you mean, most of it wrong? All of it
wrong?
Yeah,
true. Hey, I still got the... With that bloody light thing with the...
the double slit experiment. Yes.
The double slit experiment. Hey, the ending was right, just... Got one part of the formula.
Everything up until the ending was wrong.
yeah, essentially, yes.
For the record, the double slit experiment proved that light behaved like a wave.
Yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then you have other things like the Crookes radiometer, which explains how light behaves like a photon, mm-hmm. which is a particle, and then you also, like, solar panels also work. Yep. That. So there's this nice duality of light. Now that we've got that out of the way,
Indeed, we can continue on. Yeah, he's got that out of his system. You can see the tension escape him with that breath of exhalation.
I've been trying to say that for so long.
Yeah, I could tell that's been bugging you for a
little bit.
So last week on the episode, which actually was last week because I've been editing the podcast quick enough.
Woo!
Once.
High five.
Okay, hang on.
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, well done.
So we had another special guest, not as special as Tyson. A little bit scary, to be honest, the sentient plant. And I don't know, what were your thoughts around the sentient plant, Tyson?
Look, I thought it, he, she, whatever, was, they. You know, it was all right. I would say, though, you should be thankful that your really? Sentient plant is not a Populus tremoloides.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm saying that probably, but more commonly known as the quaking aspen.
The quaking aspen?
Yes.
All right, regale us. What is a quaking aspen and what makes it so terrifying?
I'll tell you. In south central Utah, mm-hmm. there is a forest, the Fish Lake National Forest, that occupies 43 hectares mm-hmm. of land. Oh. The forest is an estimated 80,000 years old.
I think I've heard this.
Weighs 6 million kilograms, mm-hmm. and it contains only one tree.
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
It is.
One tree called Pando.
That whole... All
so
those...
basically what happens is that this...
I love it.
The... Each, like,
no,
tree...
No, no, no. Wait. Hang on. Tyson, I'm looking at the Pando forest thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a million trees. It's not one tree.
No. So let me explain. So each tree that you are seeing in that picture right there, that is one sprout of the exact same root system. That goes for 43 hectares. Each individual sprout is just connected to one singular root system, mm-hmm. and it spreads.
Well, I think I remember
the world's largest organism.
Well, I see. I have issue with that because I remember the sentient plant saying it was the purveyor of all life. So who knows? I mean, its root system could go all throughout the world. I mean, it could be here before mankind even evolved or created from apes or, you know, dust.
Didn't you say, like, I had a look out the window. It's a giant 7-meter plant. But it's like ferny leaves, isn't it? Or am I seeing a
part
different
part of it planet? Is a ferny leaves, but then it's got this gigantic antennae, which we hypothesize is sending out brain waves, and maybe we should turn on the brainwave mic at some point. Unpleasant systems.
Do your neighbors have ferns, or have they suddenly sprouted ferns?
Not yet.
Well, then, I think we can safely conclude that it hasn't got a root system as vast as Pando yet.
Possibly, okay. Unless it's just very sneaky about where it's hiding all these extra little root system friends.
But they require energy. So if it doesn't have it, if it doesn't photosynthesize, then...
With his amount of fertilizer, I'd say that they've got enough energy
to go
around everywhere.
I've seen your compost bin, John. It's insane.
Mm. So I guess I'm kind of glad that you pointed out this. It's kind of scary that there's one tree that is that big, but also it's like a rival to the sentient plant. So maybe it'll be distracted trying to fight against this other tree and we'll be safe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's why it's grown its antennae.
It's got to build the army. Good and evil.
Yep.
Pando is on our side.
Maybe we need to interview Pando. So where did you say the Pando Forest was?
South Central Utah.
Yep, we need to go to Utah.
All right.
Cool. Book the tickets.
Okay.
Yeah, you're paying for it.
All right.
This would be good.
Anyway, so Tyson, you are from Screen Review Time Warp. So tell our fine listeners what that podcast is.
So Screen Review Time Warp is a podcast that I do with my friends Andrew and Zach. And basically what we do is we have a look at TV and movies. And the reason it's called Time Warp is because we all talk about something from the past. So an old movie or TV series. We then all talk about something in the present, which is a current release, usually a movie, but sometimes TV shows. And then we'll all talk about something in the future. So a bit of news or a trailer or anything like that. And we basically just talk about each things that are currently out at the time. Our most recent episode, which came out a week and a half ago, was on Ready Player One.
A controversial episode.
Ooh.
Yep. Go and have a listen to that. That was
a good episode.
It was really good. We also had a guest.
About your podcast is you don't all agree all the time.
No.
But you don't shout or scream and, you know, call each other names, which kind of disappoints me at times. But
that is what it's like on this podcast.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And there's only two of us.
Yeah.
But no, I like about it because you both get, you get two different viewpoints from listening, or sometimes even three different viewpoints from listening to your podcast, which I quite like.
Yeah, and which is good. So we generally have a bit of a niche, like we're all a bit more into the sci-fi and superheroes and those kind of, that kind of jam, but even still, like, for instance, we had not the most recent episode, but the one before, we talked about Annihilation, which was the straight to Netflix movie starring Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting movie.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we had a good
conversation about that as well.
Yes, we did, actually. Mm-hmm. Actually, Adam quite often will ring me up after he listened to an episode, and we'll have probably another hour-long conversation about his thoughts and what he agreed with, what we said, and different. It's always very good, and every now and then I'm like, that's a good point. Maybe we should have said that.
Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah, that's it.
So if you're a long-time listener of this show, you'll know that Andrew was on as a special guest when we did the It movie review back in episode 5. So we're going to slowly collect all of the hosts of Screen Review Time Warp and clone their DNA. I mean, what?
Tyson.
Feed them to the sentient plant.
Yeah, he's already drunk from the coffee cup. Now
Hashtag I'm with Pando.
Considering you are a movie review podcast.
Yes.
What is your favorite movie of all time?
Does it have to be a single movie?
Yes.
How about we go with top four?
I will give you 2.5, which means you can choose 2, but you can only give us the synopsis of the third one without mentioning the title.
Deal. Okay.
Done. Brilliant.
Am I allowed to guess what the movie is based on the synopsis?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, so try and pick the easiest one for me to guess as the last one.
All right, okay. That one can be the one that I won't say the title. That one will be easy to guess. Okay. So in no particular order for these top three, one of my favorite movies of all time is the adaptation that the Wachowski... Yeah, they were still brothers at the time.
They were at the time, yeah.
V for Vendetta.
Mm. Really?
Yep. I love that movie, not necessarily for any parts of the movie, although the movie itself is amazingly well done.
Yeah.
More because of the story and the sentimentality of that movie.
Yeah.
I find myself thinking about it more and more nowadays as well. It is actually one of my favorite books, although the movie is...
Who wrote the book?
Alan Moore. Hang on. I've got it right here. Alan Moore wrote the book and David Lloyd illustrated it.
Right.
Wait, why did you have the book with you? Did you come prepared for this?
It's his Bible.
Yes. For a later segment.
Okay.
I find myself thinking about it more and more nowadays, especially because I listen to quite a few political podcasts, and with the kind of turmoil that's happening in the US at the moment.
Globally, really.
Well, yes. Yeah. And then and also some historical things where, like, you know, I'll be listening to... I listen to the... Do you guys listen to How Stuff Works?
No.
Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, Stuff You Should Know. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been speaking about things like with Black History Month recently and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I think myself sometimes I go, like, what would... Like, I mean, I wonder how I would behave in those scenarios. And I'd always like to think that I'd be, you know, doing the right thing. But I'm not really sure sometimes.
So the visual for this movie, people might not know the name, but they'll recognize this mask, which is the Guy Fawkes mask. Does the movie have anything to do with the story of Guy Fawkes?
Yes and no. So it starts off with this big, thing of, you know, Guy Fawkes being captured and then being hanged. And it talks about how essentially if you believe something is right, you will do some extreme things to make sure that that ideal is kind of upheld. And so it takes Guy Fawkes as an idea, and the whole story, book and movie, is set in England, in London.
God Save the Queen.
Yep. And so it continues on with that theme, and the main character, you don't actually ever see his face, ever.
It's always behind the mask.
He's always behind the mask.
And it looks, and that's the Guy Fawkes mask is, yeah. It is linked to Anonymous as well.
The hacker group. Well, actually, yeah. So the hacker group Anonymous got it from V for Vendetta, mm-hmm. not from Guy Fawkes.
Yeah.
Right. So V for Vendetta got it from Guy Fawkes, and then the extension of that idea that was, that's
well, it's
what
the ideology.
Then,
Anonymous believe they're doing the
right
thing.
And Anonymous got it from there.
Yep.
So, okay. Yeah. It's, yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time. I love it. It is different to the book. I do think that it's probably more palatable.
Yep.
From the book, not because it's massively different, but there's some key, the ways he does things and the reason behind are slightly different, and that does make a big difference.
I can't watch that movie.
Really?
Yeah, not for any, like, a terrible reason or anything. I don't think it's a bad movie or anything, but I've said this before, I think to you, where... When you're sick, what do? You stay home, you watch movies, TV shows.
Yep.
It's about the only time I get spare time to watch
exactly,
movies.
Right. So I was quite ill, and I'm watching like movies and everything like that. But when I do this, I imprint my sickness onto these movies.
Oh, I got you.
Oh, no.
And I can't. Oh, no. So if I watch it again, I just get echoes of me vomiting up my guts into a bucket or something. I just can't. I cannot do it. So V for Vendetta. Gladiator, yep. Prince of Egypt,
DreamWorks. Yeah. Oh, I love that one. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's such a good movie.
Yep. Is that your pick number two, Tyson?
Prince of Egypt? It is not, no. Although, talking about V for Vendetta did remind me of the Wachowskis doing Cloud Atlas, which also... is brilliant, although I do recommend reading the book of that first.
Okay. Yeah, so I watched the movie without reading the book, and I got to the end and I was like... I'm not really sure what just happened.
Yeah. The book was actually introduced to the Wachowskis by Natalie Portman on the set of V for Vendetta.
Oh, right.
She was reading it.
Oh, yeah. Natalie Portman and Hugo Weaving in
V for Vendetta. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Natalie Portman was actually promised the character of Sonmi 451 in Cloud Atlas, but she...
Which she didn't get.
No, she was pregnant at the time.
Oh.
And that's right. The only reason. Mm-hmm. Like, she was promised it by the Wachowskis. You would get it, and she just wasn't available.
Oh,
so
that's unfortunate.
Why. Yeah, which is a shame. The book is, again, that book is incredible. And the movie, I love it.
I love the cinematography in that movie.
Oh, it's so well
done. The storytelling, I wish, came together a bit more and a bit less abstract, but maybe that's just my very...
It's interesting you say that, because after reading the book, I thought that they did a wonderful job of telling six storylines concurrently, but I was also aware that I had read the story.
Avengers Infinity War.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I was aware that I had read the book, so I was like, oh, I don't... Like, I wonder if someone who hadn't read the book and watched this, if it was going to make as much sense. So, yeah, I suspected as much, and you just telling me then, John, that you didn't quite get it, that kind of makes sense.
Mm, that's fair. It's interesting how books can color your perceptions of movies. Mm. So, it's like World War Z is the prime example I hold up as the rubbish movie of the century, because it is nothing like the book.
Until you came along to Ready Player One.
Oh.
All right, before we
get on. Number two.
Okay, number two. All right.
Move on.
Number two. Number two is another book-to-movie adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the reasons that I love it so much is that it is actually the most accurate book-to-movie adaptation that has ever been produced, ever. It is based off a graphic novel, actually a series of graphic novels.
Oh, all right.
And when the director, Robert Rodriguez...
The Peanuts movie.
Nope, not quite.
Is it Garfield? Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
So when Robert Rodriguez went to make this movie, he actually took... They didn't storyboard it. They took the graphic novel, cut up the panels, and that was their storyboard.
Oh, magnificent.
Yeah, so as a result, each scene looks identical, like frame for frame, identical to the books.
What?
That's cool.
Do you happen to know which
I honestly have no idea.
It's Sin City.
Oh, okay. I do like Sin City, I must admit. I love Sin City.
No idea what this is. Someone explain. What's the concept?
Okay, so Sin City stories, it's just, it's kind of like a crime noir story. It's set Basin City, which I can't actually remember where in America it's set, but it's basically just a haven for like the, or not even a haven, but just like the lowest of the lows kind of end up there. So it's just like...
It's Despot City, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there's, and for instance, there's a whole district that's just called, I think it's called, oh gosh, I can't remember now. There's like,
man. I haven't seen it in like 4 years.
It's like legalized prostitution because, but it's not actually legalized, but it's like,
the police won't go in and do it.
Yeah, they won't go in there. The prostitutes run the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
the red light district?
A little bit, yeah. Except it's like not just like a little section, it's like a whole chunk of the town.
Okay.
And that they are the law there. And you got like mob bosses and like, you know, drug cartels and everything. The whole works.
Elijah Wood terrifies me in that.
Yes.
Movie.
Wait, it's got Elijah Wood in it?
Yeah,
and it's terrifying.
Oh, he does like a brilliant job.
Oh, he's so
creepy.
Sickeningly scary.
Yeah, creepy.
We're talking about Frodo, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And this was after Lord of the Rings as well.
I think it was after Fellowship, but before Two Towers.
Are you sure about that? Oh,
No, not sure about that.
Because all three movies were filmed in one go.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, release, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
I might be slightly wrong with that. But yeah, so it's all done entirely black and white, just like the, just like the graphic novels, but there are splashes of color, like for
which
instance,
which is brilliant.
Yeah, like
the
blood,
artistic,
blood is always done in red.
Yeah. And it's artistically gorgeous.
Oh, it's so good.
I'm watching
well
that
done.
When I get home now.
Cause I've seen, the only other time I've seen that done is in Schindler's List, which is a great movie.
Yes.
The girl has a red dress. The only color in the entire movie is for like, a couple of minutes.
Yeah, that's it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, all right.
Wow, so sounds like a good movie. Recommended?
Like yeah.
Look, it is rated R18 for good measure. Like, you should not be watching this around little kids.
Till you're 36 until you're allowed to watch it.
Yeah, it is very violent. It is very sexual. It is super adult themed. But
so bearing that in mind,
it's like it's so well done apart from that. Okay.
Okay, remember.
Synopsis.
Not allowed to say the title.
Okay.
And you're guessing, apparently, John. You're guessing.
Man. This will be easy. All easy right. to guess for you.
Star Wars.
What?
No. Adam, you're not ding, 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 I didn't want it. No. Although they are good as well. A man, he's not allowed back in the US anymore. He's currently, like, he's got a passport watching him. And he's trying to get back into the US. And to do so, he enlists... the help of about, I think it's about six other people, in order to delve into the thoughts and dreams.
Inception.
Yeah.
I was going to guess it.
You know what? When you say, you list the help of all these other people, I'm thinking in my head, A-team?
I was wondering how long you could get through it without describing, because I instantly thought Inception when you're talking about how to passport, because... A lot of people don't think of that as the plot of Inception. They just think everyone was jumping into each other's dreams. But what happened in reality? All that happened was he wanted to get back to the US.
He wanted to get back to the US, And so,
I was impressed that you got that long without saying anything about dreams.
I've only seen Inception once. I need to see it again.
Oh, it's so... It is... I would say that this is my favorite movie of all time.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, like, he loves Inception.
Like, well, I said that just like 2 minutes ago when I was talking about V Vendetta.
Oh, yeah.
but anyway, love it. Like, it's... Christopher Nolan has such a good eye for directing and scenes and story, and it's just so well done. And do you know that he actually wrote... This is one of the first screenplays he ever wrote.
Oh, right.
And because Christopher Nolan hasn't actually done a lot of original material. In fact, as far as I'm aware, Inception might be the only one. I might have that wrong, but... and what would happen, though, is that when he...
Because, like, Interstellar was written by his brother, and then he just adapted, like, changed the script.
Oh, no, sorry. That would still count, but it was, like, The Prestige is based off a book.
Oh,
all
right.
The Dark Knights are based off Batman and stuff like that. And what would happen is he would, he and his wife would basically, after he'd done a movie, he would, they would bring the script out and be like, is it time to do this movie? And they go, inevitably they go, no, they put it back in the drawer and he would do another project. The only other time that they thought it would be good was also the time when all the Matrix movies were coming out and that whole idea of messing with reality. And they were like, don't want to be just another one of those movies. So again, put it away, didn't touch it. And it was only after The Dark Knight, before The Dark Knight Rises, that they got out and they were like, now is the time to do this.
Plus, he was epically famous and he could basically get whatever budget he wanted.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, it's stunning to watch. It is a great idea. It's got lots of, like, just the layers of dreams as well. And, like, the ultimate question at the end of, like, is he actually out of the dream or not?
Yeah. All I think about there is the episode of Rick and Morty where Rick is in the simulation. They keep simulating him through everything. So he's just like,
right.
Oh, you're a simulation, you little... Anyway, I'm not going to swear. John,
thank you.
Jumped a little there. But, yeah, I agree. I do like Inception, a good type of premise for what's real and what's not. I do like it.
Do you know there is actually a definite answer whether he's in a dream or not?
How do you know?
The dreidel?
Well, no, because this is the thing.
Is it a dreidel? Was it a dreidel?
Or just, I mean, just the spinning top, whatever.
I also know the answer to this.
The spinning top
was
not his. It was his wife's.
It was his wife's.
He has a different one, which he doesn't mention in the movie, but it is possible to work out what his tell is. Yeah. John is currently creating sign language to me, and he's got it right.
Okay.
There is a definite way to find out whether he's in a dream or not.
Oh, right. The wedding ring, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And I'm telling everybody
now.
Well,
now you just spoiled it.
Now you just told everyone.
Of course I'm spoiling it. If they haven't seen Inception at this point, then they've been living under a rock for the past...
The other thing is, we won't say whether he's in a dream or not, but even knowing now that it's his wedding ring, he's wearing his wedding ring in the dreams, he's not in real life.
Yep.
And it's possible, or I might have that switch, but I'm pretty sure I've got that right. It's possible to see whether he's in the dream or not. And if you want to know, you'll just have to go and watch it again.
All right, I can't wait to watch it again. Oh,
that's going to be good.
So good.
Okay, top-notch last pick for a movie, Tyson. I approve. Okay. Times a thousand.
Good night. I like it.
Oh,
speaking of, just quickly, in the vein of movies still, the recently rewatched something that I watched once and I was just like, it's okay. And I loved it. It's brilliant. It's witty. It's funny. It's got something to do with zombies.
A movie or a TV series?
Movie.
Okay.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching it, and I'm just like, the acting
is... Is this Shaun of the Dead?
No, that's a classic, no matter what anybody says. That's perfect.
Good. It's a romantic comedy.
No, it's
with
Zombieland.
Zombieland.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, because I don't really like... Oh, crud. What's his name? The main actor.
Woody Harrelson?
No.
Or...
Woody Harrelson.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of his
name. The guy who did Social Network.
Yep. He's also... Lex Luthor at
Jesse
the
Eisenberg.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. He's
I was going to say Mark Zuckerberg, but...
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he came. Although, if you saw the... Oh, we'll talk about that in a moment. Watch it. It's witty. It's funny. I love the rules that he puts forth. The effects are amazing. And I'm just like, I can't believe I didn't like this movie. I love those type of, you know, pullbacks where you're just like, oh, I love that. Have you ever had any of that happen before?
I'm not sure. But all I can think of when I think of Zombieland is... the animated children's show, Jimmy Neutron, where they take over a theme park to escape to space.
Right.
Isn't that the thing with Zombieland? They're in a theme park
not
when
the entire
zombies
time.
Hit?
No.
Just the start or something?
No. Literally the last 15 minutes.
Oh, yep. Okay.
That's it. Mm. But I love it. It's so fun. What about you, Tyson? Have you ever had a movie that you've disliked or had an unfavorable opinion of, but then rewatched it again, and you're just like, you know what? That's a brilliant movie.
The only one that's immediately jumping to mind at the moment is a little-known movie called Moon.
Oh, I love Moon.
I liked that the first time.
With Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey as the voice of the computer. And that's the... Oh, wait. There's one other cast member who plays his wife.
Yeah, because you guys were talking on your podcast, your recent episode, you were talking about a movie... Annihilation? No, not Annihilation. Tom Cruise. Oblivion.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right.
And you were talking about it. I'm just like, this sounds exactly like the plot to Moon, essentially.
I think I said that on the episode as well. Yeah. For those of you who haven't seen it, basically Sam Rockwell is, he's on the moon and it's like a mining contract thing and he's the only person there and basically he has like a, you know, whatever, like a 2-year contract and then he's going to go home. And then basically what happens is that he slowly starts discovering that things...
Careful. Oh. Is this going to be a spoiler?
Yeah, it's a spoiler, but this is a spoiler podcast.
I'm not spoiling anything at the moment.
Oh, you should.
But basically he's... Well, I mean, we can get to that in a sec.
Mm-hmm.
He notices that some things are just a bit different. And he's like, well, I don't remember that. And how does this work? And then he does a bit of digging. And obviously the revelation that comes out is...
We won't spoil it because people should go see it because it's quite good.
So the first time I ever watched that, I got to the end. I was like, I don't know, kind of.
Hmm.
And then I had a conversation with actually my wife, although she wasn't my wife at the time.
Hmm.
And she's like, no, it's great because of these things. And she kind of spelled out for me. And I was like, actually, yes, you're right. That's incredible. No, now I actually really like that movie.
Who's the director of Moon? John?
I can't remember now. He's David Bowie's son.
Oh, Zoe Bowie.
Although he's not called that.
Yeah, Duncan Jones.
Duncan Jones, thank you very much, yes.
Zoe Bowie, he's Zoe Bowie forever. best name on the planet.
Also went on to create Source Code with Jake Gyllenhaal, which
Warcraft.
Is quite good. And yes, Warcraft, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't mind.
Warcraft, that's another one that I rewatched. Like, when I went there, I was a little bit...
Because we saw it together.
Yeah, and I was constantly going, they got this wrong. No, this is meant to link to here and here and here. Yeah, it was very annoying. But watching it, the Warcraft movie, I'm thinking, they got all this wrong. But going back, it's actually a stunning movie.
Mm, it's very well done.
Yeah.
Have you seen it, Warcraft?
No.
Have you seen Source Code?
I have seen Source Code.
Okay.
I like the reveal at the end. Very good. It gets... I've... feel like the whole Groundhog Day concept is a bit overdone in movies, so that annoyed me, but they did get over it eventually.
Yeah, there is getting a lot of those now, like Edge of Tomorrow and things like that.
Yeah, again, I enjoyed Edge of Tomorrow, but yeah, if they want to do another looping movie, they've just got to be like, the audience will get it after the first time. Like, you don't need to keep showing the same footage over and over.
Which they did recently with that horror movie, Happy Death Day.
Oh, Happy Death Day, which I didn't see.
Saw the trailer and that was enough for me.
Yep.
I felt like I'd already watched the movie because even the trailer has bits repeated.
Exactly. And even the trailer gets to the part where she like, oh, I defeated it. And then it still comes back. It's like, what's the twist? We know what the twist is. You just told us.
Yeah. Yeah. Silly, silly, bloody advertisers. Oh, so yeah. Okay. So that's enough about movies. So I'm going to say this. Transition!
Meow.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's time for another episode of, what does Darwin call it?
World-ending scenario. World-ending scenario.
Yeah, world-ending scenario battle. But she's just had an upgrade, so it's now called Apocalypse Off officially. She couldn't pronounce the word apocalypse before, which is...
Abookaploops.
Yeah, she just could not get it. But now she can, so it's officially called Apocalypse Off, all right?
Oh, okay, cool.
Whew, it took a lot of programming, let me tell you.
Dangerous enough as it is.
Why are you upgrading the sentient AI?
She has a Twitter account, and I literally do not know who runs it, and it's terrifying.
So before, me and Adam just looked at each other, and I was like, wait, isn't it? You created the Twitter account for Darwe, right?
No.
But then you were like, I thought it was you.
I thought it was John.
Who it is.
So I'm paranoid here because I think, okay, it's definitely Tyson. But meanwhile, no, it's definitely his wife.
I'm sitting in the kitchen just watching you guys come to the realization that neither of you had made it. And I was like, well, who has then?
Yeah.
Because, your sentient AI, which you just decided to do an upgrade of.
Oh, boy, what have I done? Anyway, moving on. I think it was worth it. I may have just ended humanity, but at least we've got a good intro for our segment.
Oh, good.
It's time for Apocalypse Off. And I didn't need upgrading, John. I figured it out myself.
Today, I'm going to step back from the battlefield to let you guys wage war. So, have you come prepared with your Apocalypse Off scenarios? Gee, I caught her disease where I can't say the word. Anyway, what are your scenarios?
She's infected your brain.
So, I'll go first.
All right.
No, actually, guess first. Guess first.
Okay, all right. Do you know what a coronal mass ejection is?
I do indeed.
Please tell me.
It's essentially a solar flare. But it's,
it sounds like something you'd get from like a doctor, and it like goes in somewhere.
You don't want it to go. You really, really don't, especially where you're wanting it, where you're thinking it. Okay. So a coronal mass ejection.
Wait. I want to hear Tyson explain.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you're half right. So it can often accompany solar flares, but a solar flare is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like a solar flare.
Yeah. So
Don't pretend you knew that, Adam.
It is a significant release of plasma and magnetic field from the solar corona, often following solar flares and are normally present during a solar prominence eruption.
Has this anything to do with the popular Australian alcoholic beverage called the Corona?
That's a Mexican.
Mexican in the way that
Australia.
Fosters is Australian.
Yeah, fair. All right, fair point.
Okay.
Play on.
Coronal mass ejections happen all the time, often as frequently as every day, sometimes as infrequently as every five days. Most of them are fairly harmless because Earth, the reason that we have life here to begin with, is we have a magnetic field.
Indeed. Yep. But, yeah, sorry.
Yep, so we get a molten iron in the center, and it creates a magnetic field, and that protects us from quite a significant portion of radiation that comes from the sun.
It's like a shield around the planet, essentially.
Essentially, yes.
Which is also what causes the aurora borealis.
Exactly, that's what I was about to get to. The aurora australis. So the aurora borealis happens in the northern hemisphere. Mm-hmm. Aurora australis happens in the southern hemisphere.
Question, something I don't know, which you might. Where can you view the aurora australis? Is there anywhere in Australia you can see it from?
No. As far as I'm aware, you need to actually be possibly the very southern tip of South America.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm pretty sure you need to be on Antarctica.
Okay, gotcha.
Very, very occasionally, you can actually see it from the very bottom of Australia, but probably it wouldn't be worth doing.
Okay.
So when you see the aurora borealis or the aurora australis, it's actually charged particles in the upper atmosphere, and as they essentially kind of discharge, they release photons of light, and you get these very magical, colorful,
gorgeous
effects.
Isn't it?
Oh, they look absolutely outstanding.
Have
you guys seen the aurora borealis or australis?
Yeah. Oh, not in person photos.
Only
yeah.
in pictures. Yeah. Never seen it.
Because I've seen it. In person.
Oh, yeah.
So we went to Iceland. I'm going to diverge.
Go for it. Yeah, for
please.
Sure.
So I went to Iceland with my wife, and we went out on this huge tour driving out in a bus, and we just sort of sat there. I brought my camera to take photos because they tell you it looks way more impressive on camera than in person. So you want to take some photos so you can see what it was like later on.
Okay.
So we get there and we see it, and it's kind of like these gray stripes in the sky, and we're like, oh, okay, that's all right. But I forgot the most important thing that you need to take photos of this, because you need to do very long exposures, which
you
can't do.
Tripod.
I forgot a tripod.
No.
Tyson knows because he's a photographer.
Yep.
Now, no one else knew how to do long exposure photos, which you have to do to get a good result. So I went around teaching people how to use their cameras, and in return, they let me take a photo off the tripod that they had brought.
Yeah. All right.
So I ended up getting some all right pics.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to the end of it. It was impressive, but it wasn't earth shattering.
Can you post some of those to our social media?
I certainly can.
Yeah.
But the next day, we're not on the specific aurora tour, and we get this freak aurora display right in the middle of Reykjavik, the city in Iceland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just astounding. Like, there's light pollution everywhere, but it was so incredibly bright. You could see all the colors. It was amazing. You could just take a normal photo and it would look brilliant. So
I
lucked out with that one.
That's nice. I like it. All right. So yeah, charged particles.
Well, these aurora only usually happen, very close to the poles because, of how the magnetic field works. And basically that's just when a coronal mass ejection kind of hits through the Earth, that's where the effects kind of take place.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the 1st of September, 1859, you would have seen aurora clear as day, as you just described, John.
Sorry, did you say 1859?
1859.
Yeah, I wasn't alive then.
I know.
My mother was.
You would have seen them clear as day, clear enough that it looked like it was day. They were that bright.
Oh, wow.
Not only in Perth, Western Australia, where we are now, but in Upper Queensland.
Wow.
What?
In Cairns, like around that area?
Yep.
Wow. All right, this is amazing.
It gets better.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
That's coronal gorgeous. Mass ejection of unprecedented magnitude, henceforth known as the Carrington event, struck the Earth, essentially blasting through our magnetic field. And the resulting geomagnetic storm was catastrophic, as by 1859, do you know what we'd started using?
Electricity.
Telegraph wires as well.
Oh, no.
We had started wrapping the Earth.
I remember this,
We started wrapping
not
the Earth
being
in...
There.
Yeah, I was saying.
I remember reading about this.
Unless you are the doctor.
No, John's the Doctor. I'm the Master. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't remember this at all. I definitely wasn't there when all the power lines started catching fire.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, for those of you who are unaware, who've forgotten your Year 9 science classes.
Yeah, that's me.
Yep. Electricity and magnetism are linked. It was one of the most significant discoveries of the modern era, the fact that electricity and magnetism were related to each other. It was a huge step forward. It allowed us to essentially step into the... using electricity.
Yeah.
Now, if a giant magnetic field or a magnetic field kind of slams into the Earth and we've wrapped the Earth in metal wires that are running electricity...
Oh, no.
Or not even, that are just running. Yeah. If you have a coil of wire and you move a magnet through it...
Mm. It creates electricity.
It creates an electric field.
Mm.
What happens when you suddenly force a magnetic field through all these wires?
Everything gets zapped.
Yep. So telegraph operators were electrically shocked.
No. Not dead.
Oh, okay.
Sparks were thrown from wires. Some telegraph stations caught fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Networks suffered major outages. Magnetic observatories couldn't properly record the magnetic disturbances because they were literally off the chart.
Wow. Literally off the chart. I like it. Yeah. Jeez.
And although humans may not have been physically hurt by the event... a fair chunk of our technology would be destroyed.
Yeah.
If, since 1859, we have only started wrapping the Earth up in more and more electrical wires.
For sure.
And remember, here's the other thing. Magnetic fields can affect underground wires
It. That was actually going to be my next question. Because we've been burying a lot of our power cables and things like
and
that.
And it's not going to help.
Right.
No.
No.
Not even not from a magnetic
fantastic.
Blast like this.
Okay, and not only... Sorry, yeah, go on.
So... the estimations of if this were to happen now, the cost to just the US alone, not the rest of the world, just the US alone, would be between 0.6 to 2.6 trillion US dollars, which for conversion for our listeners, that's between 0.8 to 3.4 trillion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a bit of a benchmark, 0.6 trillion US dollars. Is approximately four times the value of all the Bitcoin currently in existence.
Oh, wow. So it beats my idea, which is going to be Bitcoin causing the apocalypse.
Yep.
And 2.6 trillion, so the upper end of that estimate, 2.6 US trillion dollars. On the plus side, that's roughly about 13% of the US's debt.
Only 13.
Okay, which enough. Also gives a scale of magnitude of how... much debt they are
Wow. I mean, not just that. I mean, it's,
so but, literally, even if the sun tried to destroy the Earth, it would need to try about five times before it could double US debt.
I think it illustrates how heavily in debt the US is.
Yes.
Because the other thing is the recovery time is estimated between 4 to 10 years.
Mm. And again, like your phones and everything are gone.
Yeah, everything.
Because all of it, like, it's gone. That's fantastic. I'm not going to help you out with anymore. But there is another thing that is a little terrifying with yours.
Yep.
And that is our magnetic field that surrounds our Earth is currently failing. Well, not failing. It's in the process of switching poles.
You know what? This is actually something I almost brought. This is my apocalypse off.
Yeah.
But I decided against it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So for those who are unaware, again, you learn this in Year 9 in your Earth and Space Science.
And just as a point of note for our fine listeners, our friend Tyson here keeps making mention of Year 9 science, and that is because he is a science teacher.
Yes, I am a science teacher. So you can actually see this is actually, again, this is one of the big pieces of evidence for the fact that, the land masses were once together and have shifted apart is that if you take a look at the, so when like lava comes up and it's got, you know, magnetic material in it, that lines up with magnetic field. So it points basically which way is north. And then when it solidifies, it can't move anymore. And what they discovered is that as you take, samples getting further and further away from these underground,
fissures.
Thank you. The way that north is pointing in different directions. And we are overdue by a few thousand years for it to switch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but when it switches, unfortunately,
the Earth is going to quite literally flip out.
It's going to... Yeah, like... to an extent.
All your calibration that works on north and south would be
reversed.
Wrong.
But not only that, when it switches, we won't have a magnetic field around our planet.
No, we will.
No, not for a period of time.
Yes, you're right. Sorry. For a short period of time, as it switches, it gets weaker.
Yeah, but what I think would be funny for me anyways, is let's say our magnetic field goes, you know what? It's time to switch. Woo! Switches.
Yep.
We have no magnetic field, and the sun goes, hey, oh my goodness, you see that, guys? Watch this. Boom! And then no more life.
You're aware that you are putting sentience on a giant hydrogen
glowing
bomb,
ball,
right?
Of gas. Yes, yeah. I am. Okay, and cool. It does not surprise me if it would be sentient, just waiting for the moment our planet is unprotected.
Well, do you know...
Wait.
You know, go.
I've got a solution for Tyson's Apocalypse Off.
All right.
It's a popular book that was written by Terry Pratchett called Going Postal, where the entire telegraph system is just a series of flappy boxes that let out light. So, problem solved.
Well,
flappy boxes.
Unfortunately, that's not going to fix the massive technology that's going to blow up.
Okay, true.
I don't... okay, so I like the... Well, so, he's saying with your Apocalypse Off.
Yeah. Right? See, that won't actually hurt humans. Yeah,
exactly.
That I'm fully aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that the resulting damage and outages of networks, I think that could send us into chaos in the apocalypse.
Remember, it's not about whether you can kill all the humans. It's whether you can start the apocalypse, yeah, which needs to have humans.
Oh, I understand.
And do you know that... Mm-hmm. A Carrington-class event almost happened again.
Oh, really? When?
Recently, 2012.
What? No, but that was the plot of the movie 2012. So no, what happened?
2012, it just missed the Earth. It struck one of our stereo sun observatories, which is outside of Earth's orbit.
Mm-hmm.
But just so you're all aware, we found out about it in 2014.
Oh, wow.
As in NASA told us in 2014.
Oh, okay. So it's like, hey,
they knew about it.
You almost died.
Yeah, basically.
All your technology. Oh, my goodness.
It's good to know they won't tell us. Yeah. So we won't need to be scared.
And this is why people should invest in books, because if this happens and we get no more bloody electricity or technology, our Kindles and phones aren't going to be worth much at all.
In between 2012 and 2022,
mm-hmm,
they predicted there was a 12% chance, which is a 1/8 chance, of a Carrington-class coronal mass ejection hitting the Earth.
That's strange. That's very strange odds.
That's fairly high.
Oh, I know that, but what I'm saying is like... I don't know. How often does a Carrington-class event occur?
Not very often.
So how are they...
Because you got to remember as well that these...
The sun has black spots and all that, yes.
Well, the sun's also three-dimensional. Like, we often think of the solar system as being on a flat plane and things just go out in one of the 360 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's one of the 360 by 360.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all different directions it can go to. It would need to blast us with a Carrington-class or Carrington scale,
mm-hmm,
CME, at our... direction when we were there.
Yes.
So along the same plane and along the same axis.
With the enormity of space around the sun having to intersect with the trajectory of our planet is astronomically high.
So these things happen a lot.
Why was it all the way up to 1/8 chance? Like, whoa, that's 1/8 chance. I don't like chances.
No. But I mean, also, that being said, you said 2022, didn't you?
So this prediction was made in 2012, yep, after the one that, the didn't, one, that yeah, didn't hit us. Mm-hmm. And they said between 2012 and 2022. So in the next 10 years, there was a 1/8 chance.
That's okay, John. We're almost there. We've only got another, 4 years.
After that, it's zero.
Yeah, it's zero.
Once we hit 2022, smooth sailing after that.
We're just going through a rough patch with the sun at the moment. You know, it's so good. All right. I like that Apocalypse Off.
All right.
I do. However, pretty tame. That's what I've got.
Okay, all right.
I mean, yours destroys technology. Mine is technology destroying us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Go.
And I'm not talking about massive robotic warships raining death down from the skies.
Datadyne and Arnie coming to get us.
Exactly, yep. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about that. No. I'm talking about something small. I'm talking about something nanoscopic.
Oh, no. Not these drones that can fly up to you and...
No, okay. Not even that. No. I'm talking about nanobots. Nanotechnology.
Oh, no.
Okay, I'm going to pause you there. Are you aware that I have a degree in nanotechnology?
Yes. No, but we're talking about future. We're not talking about current stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so...
Skepticism level is high.
Yeah, yep. And this is from a reputable source.
Okay. What's the source, just for the record?
BuzzFeed. I will tell you afterwards. No. Yeah, it's BuzzFeed. It's not, actually. Okay, so this is... when I was researching what I'm going to do for this, I'm like,
you're
on
the back foot here, Adam.
No, when I'm researching, I'm thinking, I need something different. Because I've done like a super volcano. I can't even remember what the other one was.
Did you do the
pandemic?
Virus? Yeah,
pandemic. So I thought, I need something different. I need something that is a bit out of the ordinary. So, the Sea of Grey Goo hypothesis, essentially. What's it called?
Oh, the Grey Goo.
Yes, the Grey Goo hypothesis, which I find to be quite fun. So, Reading through
I'm rolling my eyes loudly.
Yes, he
at
is.
You right
I mean,
now.
If you can't hear it, just the absolute silence, it's fine.
We need more sensitive mics to pick that up.
So
here, we'll turn up the gain.
I mean, for the point of reference, right? So technology at a simple way at the moment, IBM placed single atoms to spill out the IBM logo recently, which is a pretty impressive...
I'm aware that was part of my study. Yep.
Yeah, like that's hugely impressive,
it's
right?
It's astronomically important, yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, that's what we're at the moment, essentially. Nothing huge. But let's say in the future...
Wait, sorry, hang on. Nothing huge. We have seen the atom and we
when
have
I say nothing huge, I mean
manipulated
the,
a single atom. That is huge. Okay,
wait. Yeah. Nothing huge because it's an atom. It's the small
yeah, exactly. Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh. No, but it's nothing huge in regards to a world-ending scenario.
Okay, all okay. Right. Yep.
For the scenario of the Grey Goo hypothesis, this would have to be years and years in the future. So you've got time to, you know, live your life, have kids or whatever. But eventually medical science is going to go through probably nanotechnology to repair arteries or, you know.
We're already using it.
But. Yeah, but on a grander scale and with more complexity. So you cannot deny that is not going to take place.
I think people are unaware of how much nanotechnology, first of all, of what nanotechnology is, but then how prevalent it is. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
So let's just say you're able to program these things to a greater intelligence or whatever. There will be microscopic robots designed to do all sorts of tasks, obviously mostly in medical science, but not only just medical science. Could be manufacturing, all sorts of stuff like 3D printing even could come into play with nanotechnology with, instead of using obviously the basic standard interface as it is now, little robots could build it for you. But obviously at some point, what happens if they start to, I don't know, self-replicate to a certain extent, which, if you don't know what that is, I recommend watching Stargate SG-1 or Stargate Atlantis and look at replicators. Good fun.
Can I just ask where? No, sorry. Carry on, and then I'll write down some questions. You keep going.
Yep. Okay. Cool. So, basically, they'll be able to rearrange themselves, these single atoms, and make water out of sand or whatever like that is necessary to rearrange atoms, essentially, if necessary. So, adding protons, electrons, whatever the case may be, and what would happen if one of these tiny little things gets loose? Just one of these tiny little nanoscopic robots got loose to self-replicate. It would be able to turn whatever it is into a little robot. So each one of these nanoscopic, basically nanobots, is a nanobot factory within itself. So there's a scary bit. What would happen if just one of them were accidentally thrown away? It would go around changing atoms into robots, essentially. Then these robots would make more and more at an exponential rate. So doubling, until basically horror has unfolded in absolute mayhem and chaos. So people believe that within 72 hours, every single atom on Earth would be turned into a nanobot, which I think is quite interesting. So all buildings, cars, plants, rocks, animals, and even humans are now nanobots. There is an endless grey sea of goo. And let's just say extraterrestrials were to come down and land, those nanobots would kill and destroy them as well. So I like this as a world-ending scenario, even if it is completely unlikely, which I don't think it is, I think, because that kind of defeats my purpose. But I like a grey sea goo. It seems almost peaceful in comparison to the sun deciding that it wants to end our existence and kill us. Now, before we go, before we jump into debate here.
Okay.
John?
Yeah.
Are you okay there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Researching.
Oh, okay.
I found out some interesting things about the grey goo hypothesis.
Okay, good. I would like you to be a adjudicator here.
Okay.
The moderator.
The moderator, if you will. Not just for this debate, but I want you to guide our listeners to who do you think... Well, what idea do you think is more prevalent and likely?
Well, we already have a few examples of self-replicating. How do we put this?
Self-replicating machines?
Self-replicating concepts
okay.
In the world.
Sentient. Dalware. We just need to keep a container behind that firewall.
In the Future Edition podcast, I believe, I talked about how nanotechnology has enabled us to create basically solar panels that work almost exactly the same way as plants photosynthesize.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there was a race years and years ago that invented self-replicating robots that were made out of carbon, and all that's left of them is these things that we call plants.
Oh, interesting. terrifying.
So perhaps Adam's scenario has already happened.
But what if it happens?
But instead of a grey goo, it was a green goo.
Green goo. Indeed. Yeah, so I am highly worried that it won't cause the apocalypse. It will just be the end of everything. All of a sudden, everything is grey goo.
It'd be so peaceful. I mean, obviously, you won't be sentient anymore because your brain matter's been converted.
He's one of them.
Okay.
Sorry. I have a couple of questions.
Missed a degree
for you.
In nanotechnology.
Yep.
Yeah.
First of all,
you're wrong. You should
look. I didn't,
didn't
want to start with that.
Our audience here, Tyson's like pointing at me, just like, yeah, it's good fun. Yep.
First of all, how big are these nanobots?
I can't remember because I was skimming.
Because everything is made of atoms.
Yes.
So in order to have something, have anything, it needs to be made of atoms. So before, when you're talking about atoms being turned into nanobots, that's not possible. You would need to have something that is large enough to have a collection of atoms that can then be something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. But
like, for instance, like water only exists because it is a
hydrogen and oxygen.
Two hydrogen atoms combined with an oxygen atom, and that creates water. Mm-hmm. In order to make something, and that is obviously a water molecule is then bigger than a hydrogen atom or an oxygen atom.
But you're saying, so let's just, in the realm of this fantasy land that I've created here.
I'm glad you said fantasy.
Yeah.
Carry on.
It's science fiction land. How about science fiction?
Still fiction.
Yep. who knows? Hey, we don't know that. John's being the official, like, researcher.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say, we're going to have to give Adam more of a
chance. I have a degree in nanotechnology. No,
we don't listen to reason on this podcast.
We don't, exactly. What is wrong with... but no, the, okay. So let's just say we have this, this... almost sea of grey goo.
Yeah. Okay? No, wait. Go back to my question.
Oh, I am. No, okay. This is what I'm getting to. I'm just saying in this process. Right?
Yep,
let's say we've got the sea of grey goo, right? Or even, let's say, a cup full of it.
Okay.
Right? And before, you know, the mad scientist with the lightning storm ranging overhead pulls the lever, he's programmed into them, like these little tiny robots, that they can... instead of remaining as a single entity, like such as a single atom or whatever, they can band together to create a different entity to modify whatever. So instead of a single atom changing around and modifying another single atom, you have a different, I don't know, like 6,720,364,862 atoms modifying four atoms or whatever.
So essentially what you're saying is that collectively, these nanobots would have different purposes.
Well, they can have different purposes, but they can also, like, not sentience in a word, but more like they have their directive, which is assimilate all life. Wow, we're going into Borg here. We're going into Borgs here. So all that would come into the being of them being able to work together to achieve that goal.
Okay, so essentially what you're describing there is a plant or an animal.
Yeah.
That's a collection of cells that are together to achieve a purpose, which is survive and to procreate.
They don't have to stay as that, is what I'm saying. But essentially that would be fair.
Second of all, a couple of things. How are they getting the energy to continue on? Where are they storing this program, quote unquote?
Mm-hmm.
And how are they rearranging atoms? Because that requires a lot of energy.
Okay, so at the moment, how is that happening with nanotechnology?
Do you mean like as in currently?
Yeah.
Okay, so the term nanotechnology is usually... it's technology that utilizes nanoparticles. So a really easy example is, for instance, nanoparticles of titanium oxide, I believe it is put in sun cream because it is a far better reflector of UV radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Silver nanoparticles are put on Band-Aids and dressings because silver is a natural, it is biocompatible.
So what you're saying is natural antibacterial. Nanotechnology is a misdemeanor in a sense that it's not actual robotics. It's
exactly. It's like the idea of nanobots. Nanobots is not a real thing. It's not something that can exist because that would require such a level of,
complexity.
Complexity in order to make it a robotic kind of thing. Now, don't get me wrong, we still have things like DNA computing, which is actually really, really interesting, but it's not the scale of this robots.
This is to say, this isn't now, this is in the future. I mean, let's think about...
You can't change how atoms work.
I'm sorry, but didn't we just discuss how a galaxy in itself is behaving in a way that doesn't align with physics, or how a sun in a birthing cloud is larger than what physics currently allow. So we're
saying still doesn't change how atoms work.
We don't know that.
But no, right, we do know that.
All right, adjudicator is coming in. I think we've heard Tyson's case,
and we're doing this deliberately, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You said before that you got a degree in nanotechnology, so I've chosen something that is specifically nanotechnology-based to mess around a bit.
So I'd like to also say that the grey goo hypothesis is largely a theoretical thought construct as a way of discussing highly unlikely but highly destructive end results of technology, much like mm-hmm. the singularity where computers learn how to destroy the world, it's essentially.
Fun time.
Bad way of summarizing it, but let's move on. So, you have heard both cases of the apocalypse off. Remember your rating on which one is most likely to cause the apocalypse,
yep.
or which one is most likely to grind Tyson's gears to the point where he
so
can't
remember,
stop.
Vote.
I would
vote
encourage
me.
All listeners to go on a factual basis.
Grey goo no, hypothesis.
On this podcast.
Whoever lets facts come into a good podcast.
Last time we ended up having a fight with Darwin, so we never announced who the winner was. Actually, the winner of the last one was me with the, what was it? It was bees.
Bees. How did bees beat a super volcano?
Yeah, because the super volcano just, it's not going to wipe out.
I voted for bees.
You voted, you literally said bees are like volcanoes. How is that a quote that could win that debate?
Look, I'm an impartial judge now.
You can't fight the numbers, Adam.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
can't fight the numbers.
Okay, fair enough. I'll concede.
Put your votes in. Is it going to be grey goo or is it going to be
coronal mass ejection?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, honestly, it sounds like something weird
CMA.
That you get from a doctor.
Oh dear.
That was fun.
It was.
I love messing with people. It's just, you were furious. You were seething.
I was.
He was typing away at his laptop like a madman.
The problem is that you do it in fun. There are some people who are genuinely misinformed and they will try and have these conversations and you're like, no, like this doesn't require a lot of knowledge for you. Anyway.
You see, this is how you get to people, folks. You just need a bit of information, find their weak spot and prod at it like just, it's fun.
Net neutrality. It's a big topic at the moment because there's been some laws passed in the US that mean that internet service providers can basically charge whatever they want depending on what content you choose to see on the internet. Which, if you want to summarize it in a really simple way, means that one ISP might be able to say, well, you're listening to Surviving the Apocalypse the Nerds Way. We're going to charge you $50 extra for that because you clearly like it. The $50 isn't going to go to me and Adam to support us.
No.
It's going to go to the ISP for no given reason.
An ISP, what does that stand for, John?
Internet Service Provider.
Mm-hmm. So that's like your Telstra, Optus, Internode, iiNet, things like that. Mm-hmm.
So, Tyson, are you for or against net neutrality?
I, as you might be able to tell with my Electronic Frontier Foundation stickers all over my laptop here.
And the privacy badger. Yep.
Of which I am a member of the EFF.
Ooh.
I am all for net neutrality laws. I am 100% against the repeal that is currently taking place in the US Congress. And
I think we've confused Adam. So net neutrality.
In my head, I'm just like, wait, you're for the net neutrality laws.
So what's actually happened in the Congress is that net neutrality laws were passed in 2012
yes.
in the US. What's happened recently is that a repeal of those laws.
Okay,
has
gotcha.
Been
sorry.
Forth.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm up to date now. Okay. Yeah, gotcha. Sorry. In my head, I'm just like, wait, wait a second. Yeah. That can't be right. Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
So I'm all for the net neutrality as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
I would dare say that I think it is the biggest issue of the modern era.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I say that is because the internet is the biggest communication tool of our time.
Yeah, totally.
And if you mess with it, it affects everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So all other issues will be affected if net neutrality laws are repealed.
Yep, I agree 100%.
So net neutrality is the idea that it you can't specifically charge differently depending on what you're accessing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's less what you're accessing and if you have access to it. So as opposed to like, it might not be, for instance, I want to listen to Surviving the Apocalypse in a Nerd's Way, so therefore I'm going to charge you more. It's the fact that you don't get access to podcasts unless you're on our
$12.99 a month
tier. Yeah. Yes.
Which reminds me of Foxtel, which charges extra for movies over TV shows. And I'm just like, what? Why? Netflix, you pay less for both of them at once. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, Foxtel.
No, please, Foxtel, no thank you. Terrible, terrible company. Mm. Yeah, you heard me.
Oh, there goes our sponsorship deal.
We've got so many sponsors, I mean, we can just get rid of him, Rupert Murdoch. So, the...
Making some powerful enemies there, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, Rupert Murdoch, come at me, bro. You're old. I'll push you down upstairs.
Well, I mean, we're also taking on Ajit Pai at the moment. He's the chair of the FCC.
Oh, really?
Who's repealing this. So,
well, this... Okay, so this is...
he's got enough enemies, so... Yeah.
This is in America. So we need to stress that point first. I know... Yes. This is in America to begin with. Okay?
Yep.
They will set the trend.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, American politicians are corrupt to the point of, like, they get lobbied to a massive extent where their vote is essentially brought one way or the other.
Well, there was a study done by a university in, I can't remember where, in the European Union, where they actually discovered that America is an oligarchy, not a democracy.
Yeah.
Because out of, like, they looked at all the bills that had passed over the past, I think it was like 80 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was some stupidly high number, like 90% were in the interest of businesses, not of
the people.
The people.
Right, and, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interestingly, but okay, so net neutrality. Now, I am for net neutrality 100%.
Yep.
But there needs to be, I like balance on the podcast. So that is generally why John and I have an excellent dichotomy between us, because he's generally the nice guy and I'm the terrible human being.
Right. Yes, I had to support reality TV last episode because you kept ragging on it.
And then in the end, I was swung around and I was like, oh my goodness, The Island with Bear Grylls is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is true. Fantastic series. But let's say I'm going to have to take on the mantle of devil's advocate here.
Mm, this is going to be interesting.
I don't want to do this. So net neutrality laws.
Is it because you know that you're wrong?
Is that why? That is 100%. Yeah, but let's face it. I knew the grey goo hypothesis is rubbish, but I can still...
He heard it. Everyone, you heard that. He admitted defeat.
John.
Come on.
John, as you're listening to this while you're editing, cut that part. Also, pick up milk. Okay, so...
Was that for you or
that
for
was,
me?
Leave pick up milk part in just to confuse the listeners and remind me to pick up milk. Okay, so Tyson.
Yes.
Hypothesis, oh my god. The net neutrality.
Yes.
Do you not believe that let's take away the idea of corrupt organizations and governments or whatever like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go with the idea of not privacy, but more along the lines of capitalism, which is we are capitalists. We are in a capitalist economy. We're in a capitalist country. We are in a capitalist Western civilization, essentially. America, UK, Germany, Australia, New Zealand, or yada, yada, yada. Most first worlds are capitalists. So, do you not believe that businesses have a right to be able to charge what an individual, a consumer, is consuming?
Hang on, I'm not quite following because are already charged for.
Oh, I understand. But as a society, this type of stuff evolves. Okay. So we come through,
I'm liking this.
So let's say rice, for instance, back. Let's not say rice. Let's say salt back in the 1700s or whatever. That was quite expensive. Nowadays, you can go down to the supermarket and just buy a whole tub of it for $2.99.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, that's expensive.
But. The trends change. The trends evolve.
Okay.
Obviously, that is a very broad example. But still in the vein of... You understand what I'm saying, though.
All right.
Consumer trends evolve and change. So, as such, do you not believe that the internet has evolved to such a point and changed to such a point that there needs to be legislation to keep up with that change and to keep up with the capitalistic interests?
But I'm not sure what you mean by legislation to keep up with capital interests. Are you talking about so that businesses can make more money?
Yeah, well, essentially. And like I said, To remind my fine listeners, I am 100% for net neutrality, but I'm just trying to make some type of argument to say some balance.
Don't give it away.
Rebut that.
Yes, please.
So, okay.
Thank God.
Taking it from the point of view of businesses, okay?
Okay, yep.
Let's say, for instance, it's, I don't know, like 1999 or whatever, and you and your college roommate, you're sitting there and you have this great idea for this internet-based thing you're going to do. So you decide to build a computer out of pieces of Lego, and you've got hard drives in there, and that's going to be your first server.
Okay.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
I know this story.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You call yourself Google.
Okay.
And you are a search engine. You're currently taking on the likes of Alta Vista and Yahoo.
Alta Vista.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jive.
Now,
Mr. Jive's?
In the world
Ask
of...
Ask Jeeves.
Thank you.
Ask Jeeves.
Yep. Mr.
In the world of net neutrality, you can put your ideas out on the internet and you can see what happens and you can see that, you know, in whatever we are, 20 years later, you're one of the largest companies in the world.
Yep.
In the world of legislating and against net neutrality...
We're getting rid of neutrality,
You gain a bit of traction and Yahoo goes, oh, who's this? Because we've got all this money, we are going to go to all the ISPs and go, we want you to block this IP address or this website.
So,
dude.
Dreadful, but do you not think that in this legislation that's being put forth, that there would be protections put in place for that type of stuff?
No, that's literally the point of the legislation.
No, that's fine. Like, I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, we can often, it's easy for me to go in hindsight, but, here's another example. Let's say, for instance, Amazon starts up a podcast, and let's say they call it the nerdiest way to survive the apocalypse.
Oh, we're still in them, bastards. Okay. We're still in them.
Now, they might not be likely to do that, but did you ever think that the online bookstore of 94 was going to be selling food in a brick-and-mortar store? Because last year, they bought out Whole Foods Markets for $13.4 billion.
Hey, if Amazon want to pay us $13.4 billion, I'm fine with that.
But they're not. They would just pay ISPs so that they could be in the fast lane.
I see.
Yeah.
So,
and we don't always know where they're going. Like, did we ever think that Google was going to get into the self-driving car business?
No, that's a fair point. So that legislation is rubbish then, obviously.
Yeah.
But, so let's go into a different vein.
Okay.
We've discussed that part, right? So, the legislation against net neutrality is rubbish in that regard. So, it stifles creative content.
Yeah.
Okay. Boom. We solved that problem.
Good.
Okay. Next.
That was
easy. Yeah. Right. No, that's fine. So, I'm not going to argue too much. Not creative content. We just did that. What was the other part?
What about illegal content? Is it dangerous?
Spreading.
Okay.
At the moment, there's a huge problem with, and I'm not saying this from President Trump, but there is a problem with fake news throughout a lot of social media.
This wasn't where I was going, but sure.
Sorry. I'll let you do that. So fake news at the moment is a rather large problem because it can cause mass panic. It can cause a fluctuating problem with the stock market and all this type of stuff, which has been seen many times before. How many celebrities do you hear about have died who are still alive? Like, Mark Hamill has that, twice a year. And he puts out a tweet to say, no, I'm still alive. But with this type of legislated and governed internet bill, do you not believe that that might put an end to that type of stuff?
The problem
is... It might bring a bit of stability to that market?
The problem is that... what starts as I'm going to legislate against fake news can very quickly turn into I'm going to legislate against news I don't like.
Oh, 100%. But do you not believe that should be steps in the legislation that is currently on the floor of the US Senate to change that to have those type of protections put in place?
The problem is, as I said, I don't think it can stop there.
Okay.
Like, it's so easy. And, for instance, the thing that I think about is, and this is an issue that I will often be contested, what I'm about to say, sorry, often be contested with. Some of you may remember the awful incident, I think it was the Boston Marathon, where there was a bombing.
Yeah.
And the FBI got the phone of one of the bombers.
Okay, yeah.
And Apple refused to work with them to de-encrypt it.
Yeah. Was it Apple?
It was Apple.
Okay, yeah.
And there was this big thing about lots of people like, oh, Apple thinks they're above the law, blah, blah, blah. And the FBI was like, we want you to build backdoors into phones, things like that. Mm. And Apple refused. And they said, you know, we're not going to do this because, you know, it's someone who has well and truly done the wrong thing here at the moment.
Mm.
But later on, it might not be.
Mm. Do you not... I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
But with... Do you really believe that the FBI couldn't break into an Apple phone?
So, the FBI did break into the phone.
Okay.
And Apple said, you know, how did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Without really skipping a beat, the FBI was already, within a day, talking about how they were going to use the same technique to break into other people's phones who weren't convicted of bombing a marathon.
Yeah.
So, it escalates and it goes on. And, like, you only need to look at things like the Snowden files to see how one bit of power then gets translated into mass surveillance and things like that. Whew. It may start with something like fake news,
mm-hmm.
which, don't get me wrong, like, I'm happy to get rid of the idiocy that can exist on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
But it will very quickly turn into, well, this is just... like, this is fake because they got this one thing wrong, but the other things were right, to, well, I didn't like it, to mm-hmm. now we're censoring part of the internet.
Mm-hmm. So... I agree. I think, like I said, I'm not going to argue too hard against net neutrality.
Like, it also doesn't... because the other thing as well is that a lot of the things that Trump, for instance, was saying was fake news was not fake news. It was just news he didn't like.
Yeah. But as this is a podcast that isn't about politics in the slightest,
okay.
we're not going to go too deep into that stuff. But it's more like net neutrality for me isn't about politics. It's about the freedom of the internet. And yes. For anybody who's listening to this podcast... you know, you should be totally and 100% for net neutrality, because if you want to create something, you have the opportunity to do it. But John, you had a question for Tyson.
What about illegal content? Would this help, like, fight that?
Again, it gets down to this idea of, in my opinion, it's... so, okay, first of all, illegal content is still illegal. It gets taken down. Like, the way that people get around it is, for instance, a lot of the torrenting websites, they have these big clauses that they, you know, you have to legally own this material already. So, for instance, one of the big kind of arguments is, you know, downloading music. If you already own that music as a CD or a record or anything like that, you are legally, at least in Australia, you are legally allowed to have a digital copy of that music.
Right.
I did not know that, like, until, I think, last Friday when we were at Stefan's bookshop and everything like that. You actually made this comment. And I had no idea about that. Like, I have all the seasons of Scrubs on DVD, but I've always wanted it on digital, and I don't illegally download stuff.
Yeah, so you are legally allowed to, at least in Australia, and that's how these websites stay up, because you can download them as, you know, this is my... because the other thing is, there's nothing stopping you from getting your DVDs, putting them on computer, and digitizing them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it used to be a lot more common before they started DRM. You could just get a CD, burn it straight onto your hard drive. Yep. Also, great CD job name-dropping Stefan's books, because that means we get another book.
Oh, free book. Free book. Yep.
Oh, does that mean I get one as well?
No, sorry. Yeah, this is Surviving the Apocalypse cast, aren't we?
Okay.
All right, so I
love you, Stefan.
I'm thoroughly convinced. Was there anything more that you wanted to add? I think we cut you off there a little bit.
I have so much written down here.
Give us the top three, and I love using the term three because three is an awesome number. The top three points you want to make about net neutrality. Wrap it up in, let's say, I'm going to start a timer.
All right.
And as soon as this timer ends, I'm going to smack the table. Whoops, and my mic just went off. There we go. I'm going to smack the table, and you're going to stop talking no matter what sentence you're in the middle of, okay?
How much time do I get?
You get a minute.
A minute?
Okay, I'll give you a minute and a half.
Goodness. Okay.
All right, hold on. All right. No, not 50 minutes. Cracky. This is a long episode, and thank you for sticking with us, people.
I'm just going to start. Okay, so freedom of the internet allows people to communicate across borders and barriers. The Egyptian revolution of 2011 was possible due to online communication. Oh. What happens if people are blocked from communicating because the current government doesn't like what they are criticizing? In the UK, BT Broadband was accused of throttling the speed of BBC's iPlayer. That is, they were restricting access to basic information such as news. The idea of a competition argument is flawed. That is, if you don't like your ISP because they're blocking this, then switch. First of all, where I live, I don't have access to anyone other that I can switch to. Second of all, the European Union already tried this these anti-net neutrality laws. They were engaged in blocking and throttling, and it resulted, unfortunately, with a lot of other traffic being affected by this. Oh. It meant that other people couldn't get legitimate content or things that were outside of this, quote, filter, unquote, in order to actually get what they needed. Switching ISPs didn't change this because these blanket rules were affecting content other than what they other they designed it for. As a result, the European Union adopted net neutrality laws, and it has been smooth sailing ever since. First of all, and lastly, ISPs are businesses that want to make money. This repealing these laws is designed just for them to make money. It's so they can charge people for fast, which is more appropriately full speed access. They want to be able to charge sites for fast lanes. It also incentivizes ISPs to not invest in faster networks, because in order to get people to upgrade, the normal basic plan has to be crappy enough that they want to change it. A recent study by Adobe found that close to half the internet users simply switch to a different service if it is slow loading, with up to 85% switching if it is a video service that is slow loading. Oh. Who do you think's going to win in a two-tiered system? It's the people who are rich. Who do you think's going to be left behind?
No.
Who do you think's going to be left behind in a two-tiered system? The people who can't afford it. Do you know you can't find a homeless shelter without the internet anymore?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it's 100% I agree with net neutrality. And I'm sure all our fine listeners also agree with net neutrality. But
I just want to say, can we have like a 1 minute Tyson rant that is featured on this episode?
That's not a bad idea. A minute 30.
I'm convinced.
While I had the timer on my phone going, and every now and then his eyes would like skip to the timer and just start speaking a bit faster. It was very good. So yeah,
very well done.
Can I suggest one last thing for your listeners?
Go on.
There is an application you can get on Android. I don't know if it exists on Apple. It's called Ooni Probe, O-O-N-I Probe. Mm-hmm. First of all, before you install this, read the disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a application that essentially you can set it to go, you know, I set mine to go at 6 a.m. in the morning. It just goes off and it tests a bunch of websites to see if your ISP is blocking or throttling.
Yep.
It is mainly based for US services, but it will send data back to their labs, and it's run by the Tor Project. Highly recommend it, but read the disclaimer, especially if you are in a country that has certain restrictions on content.
What's this? How do you spell it again? One more time.
We'll put it in the show notes.
O-O-N-I. Probe.
All right.
Yep.
Brilliant.
I don't like probes. They're scammy.
But yes, make sure you read the disclaimer.
No worries. All right, fine people. You heard that. Hopefully that has educated you somewhat. I'm sorry if there's anyone out there who is against net neutrality and my feeble arguments just did not live up to your expectations. But that's only because, well, I like having free creative content at my disposal.
Exactly.
Indeed.
It's also not a problem because probably you can't access our podcast because you're being charged extra.
That's right.
Transition!
All right, so we're having way too much fun, but we've gone over time for episode one. So come back and tune in for episode two with Tyson. Are you going to stick around and talk to us some more?
Oh, I'm quite enjoying this. So yeah, I might come back and we'll continue on, and this will be hot diggity daffodil.
I look forward to it. Where can we find you?
You can find us on any good platform that has podcasts. My platform of choice on the Android ecosystem is Player FM. We are called Screen Review Time Warp, four words. But yeah, you can find us on podcasts for Apple or whatever they call it now. We're on Stitcher. We're on Radio Public. We're kind of anywhere.
We need to get on Stitcher.
Otherwise, if you do a search, you can find our RSS feed, and you can add it to any other system you want as well. You can find our Twitter for our podcast, at SRTW Podcast. Hit us up on there and give us a listen and give us a rating or review.
No worries.
And, yeah, it's good.
No worries. Well, you can find me at Voice of Adam at Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook. Just search The Nerds Way and we'll pop up.
Or facebook.com/TheNerdsWay.
That as well.
Twitter.com/TheNerdsWay_pod.
Mm-hmm. We obviously, every episode we put out, we announce it. So if you want to keep up to date and get it as soon as it pops out, turn on those notifications.
And don't forget to vote for either one of our two apocalypse offs, which is the Grey Goo Hypothesis or what is it called again?
Coronal mass ejection.
Which, which has not caused an apocalypse, I'd just like to add.
I'm unbiased. Factual, possible scenario. The science fiction mumbo-jumbo.
You can also email us at thenerdsway@gmail.com.
And yes, thank you very much for coming on the episode, Tyson. It was a pleasure.
It was enjoyable, very much so.